Alrighty, precepts class. So let's make kasho. In the sacred presence of the one who studied would abide in his teachings, be our guide, and we follow his glorious example, soul path until we too shall attain enlightenment. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond recent, Maha Parajna, Paramisa. All right, a lot of people here from last week. Good to see. Minshew's not here this week. Yeah, couldn't make it. I will miss next week. So we've been getting a little bit of a tag team to start things off. So I wanted to check in to get rolling here on the two practices that we talked about last week. The recitation of the Kyoji Kaimon, which we did half an hour ago, and also the recollection of remembering, how the day went and just noticing like moments of tension. And curious, have you remembered to do that? What have you learned anything? Is it frustrating? Is it delightful? What's showing up for you? A couple of responses.
Well, even on the days where, there's not morning service, I recite the Kyoju Kaimon. That one's pretty ingrained as just part of my practice. But the recollection one is the one I found difficulty, I guess, just remembering to do. Maybe it's just at the end of the day, I'm really tired, I'll call in bed. I have managed to do it a couple times since last time, which is more than I've typically done. And there are times where like, oh, it takes a while, like wind back through a day and like find like where a sticking point was. And yeah, that's just kind of my report.
Thanks. Yeah, Benny.
Yeah, similarly, I've had difficulties with recollections. And I think for me is that when I start to recollect the day, it kind of transpires to something further in the past, or it becomes worry about something in the future. So I was curious about how to work with state, and it feels like very nonlinear, my recollections. I'm curious about how to work with that.
Sure. Okay, great. I think there's wide variation in how linear the recollection is for different people. It doesn't need to be. I think what you're speaking to of like it's very easy for like starting the recollection practice and that just being a launch pad into future thought, past thought, right? And just sort of Papancha is the Sanskrit word for that. Like kind of getting lost. And so one, like if you keep it kind of short, you're going to notice more when you depart, right? Because if you're only giving yourself like 5 minutes to do it, like there's just a little bit more like you have to pay attention in order to do it in 5 minutes, otherwise it's just not going to happen. So that might be useful. Another thing is just like let the repetition add up, because at some point you're going to kind of know what the deal is. You're going to kind of, oh, this is what's happening right now. And the two or three things that like matter on a given day are going to jump out. And it won't take very long at all. You'll just be like, okay, now what do I not want to remember? Oh yeah. Right. And you're done. Like that was it. So like trust that that will happen with some time. If you get lost here and there, like that's just part of accruing that time.
Yeah, cool. Thanks. That's helpful. I
Great.
think I get kind of lost in trying to like linger onto it, and kind of setting that time limit would be helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
This is Kristen. The reading the precepts in the morning has been really nice, a really nice way to start the morning. I just like it. It's fine. I found that the recollection, like, oh, I've also been putting, I was concerned that I wouldn't remember to do it in the morning, but I didn't, like, had the little fold out, like, mm-hmm. on my nightstand.
Right there when you wake up.
And then the recollection, I haven't, also was concerned I was going to forget to do that, but it's kind of naturally bubbling up mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. of the reciting it in the morning. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm just sort of naturally noticing, like, and yeah.
Great, great. Glad to hear. All right. Oh, one more? Yeah.
I really enjoyed the chanting in the morning as well, and the recitation. I'm sort of new to like reciting out loud, mm-hmm. and so the instruction to not try and understand it and let it wash over you. I'm also an English teacher, so it was really hard. and I found myself over the week like trying to. Wanting to stop and like examine, pick apart, and forcing myself to just kind of be in that moment and let it wash over me was really powerful, because then I did find that it would kind of bubble up naturally, like the understanding would come by itself later mm-hmm. If I didn't force it in that moment. But that was a challenge for me.
Great. Yeah, we all bring a lot to the front. Oh. Okay. Yeah, so we're all seeing it from, you know, with all of our history, and there's a lot of different ways in there.
I was just going to ask for like a little more elaboration on recollection, because I feel like it's kind of similar to what I do, but I like not usually super concise about it. But like, yeah, I'm like, I'll review my day at the end of the day. Could you say anything more about, like, I know that there's often like kind of a second step, but do you want to speak to that?
Yeah. Now? Yeah. So like, I think the second step is particularly noting, you know, where we react. So when you remember something and there's like a little bit of a flinch, right? A little bit of a constriction, that's useful information. And, you don't have to explain why. You don't have to like explore the motivations of the people involved. You don't have to like make a plan for it not happening in the future. All those things may be useful, but that's not part of the recollection practice, right? It's just noting, oh, like constriction, right? And then like continuing the day, and like that's enough. Right, you're like, what we're trying to do with this practice is bring more awareness to, like what are the leverage points? What are the pivot points during the day where like, it probably could have been smoother. It probably could have been less suffering. And so, giving yourself that extra little bit of noting with probably a little bit more full awareness than you had in the moment. Helps that land. Yeah, it's not a, it's not like you don't have to fix everything when you see it. You're just noting it and trusting that, like, actually, that's enough. Big picture.
Allison, I think because I want things to be neat and tidy, when I hit those constriction points, I was continually saying, okay, so let's tie this back to precepts. And in all circumstances, it was just, no, this is just another place that I worry I made a fool of myself, which I couldn't really tie back. And so I was like looking for, I don't know, just some more complete circle in the exercise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, and that, you know, that's part of what we'll get into over the course of this series. Like everything can sort of tie to precepts, and but it doesn't have to. And Like it's a useful heuristic, but like there's only 10 of them and there's infinite situations we find ourselves in. And so like it's enough to recognize like, oh yeah, out. that's pretty sure. Yeah. Okay. So one thing I'm taking from hearing those responses is that you're largely like finding a way to fit this into your day, which is great. I think I'm really happy to hear that. I feel like this is, I don't want this to be like an extra task added to an already like overfull calendar, right? And I think like we're all experiencing suffering and we're all gonna die and like that's a big deal. And so, and this is something that really changes that situation. So like, I think getting to work with precepts is really lucky. And so it's not something like added to like your list of tasks, like this is the main event. So this is, I don't know, that's my take there. It's important. You can't get a whole lot more central than that. So yeah. So that's sort of talking about the homework. Now moving on into what we're talking about this week, I wanted to, for the English teachers out here, talk a little bit about the document as a whole. And the next bunch of classes will be kind of focusing on individual precepts. But for this one, we're gonna kind of look at groups of them. So Kyoji Kaimon is comments on giving and receiving the precepts. Kaimon means precept gate, so it's like that process of conferring them, of offering them and taking them. It's a compiled text. It's it's a bunch of different sources that were put together. Sources include Dogen and potentially Bodhidharma, at least that's how the legend goes, and Rujing. Mostly it was a couple of Dogen students who compiled it, Sene and someone else, I don't remember. Yeah, it must have been Asia. And so this is the primary presentation of the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. So a lot of things will refer to this text. So it's been around for 800 years or so. What it does, so there's this kind of introductory section, and then there's this section on contrition, and then there's a section on the three, on taking refuge and the three pure precepts. And so we'll talk about the taking refuge and the three pure precepts tonight. And then following that is the 10 grave precepts, which we'll explore mostly for the rest of the class series. And those are the ones that are most specific and, tend to bring in a lot of like, well, how does this happen in real life? So this is a little bit broader tonight, perhaps. So precepts are not rules. They're not. They're a description of bodhisattva activity. So this is what it looks like to be a bodhisattva. If we're trying to hold the precepts, either we do and it feels good, or we don't and it hurts and we notice, and that that gives us the feedback we need to adjust. like deciding you're going to take the precepts is a way of like sort of elevating that, like the noticing of, ouch, that hurts, right? So that's troublesome, right? That's problematic. You're making life a little bit more difficult, but it's really useful. Yeah, so that's part of like accepting that responsibility to live life as a bodhisattva, right? And I think that's, it's easy to like put that off, right? To kind of hold that as something separate, something in the future. Once I have a certain number of years, once I have a certain amount of wisdom, once I have a certain life experience, then I'll do that. And precepts are really saying, like, actually, like, you're included, like, you've got this. And so step up. Let's do it. Yeah. Okay. Let's break off into threes. And I have a question for you. So find two other people. Move around a little. Sure, yeah, make some noise, that's fine. Looks like there's... All right, so the question is, so let's say during your day something happens, there's that little, right? How do you distinguish, like, is that a precept or is that a preference? Is that something I just don't like? Or a habit, or, you know, something, right? So how do you discern that in yourself? All right, let's come on back. We'll find different groups later. Did you clarify it? No? Okay. Is that the general consensus?
This is Yukio. One of our group members had a nice description speaking about sort of like the elevation of where it was landing in the body, and then used words like prickly versus kind of, I don't know, the lower one was, I'm not going to get the words right, more resonant or just sort of like kind of bigger, as opposed to more sort of like servicey and annoying. And I appreciated that.
I just want to say we said almost the same thing. A lot of the kind of where it is in the body, where it's felt kind of like heady versus just like dropping in the gut. But something else that I really liked was we talked about the precepts having more of a sense of curiosity to it, whereas like a habit or a preference or something feels like, you know, like it bugs you and you move on. Mm-hmm. But the precept, it's like this, what's that about, you know, that lasts.
Nice. Okay. And back there.
In our group at camp, the question came up, if it was just a preference, you wouldn't feel anything. It would be like a habit that you would just go on and do, and you wouldn't notice anything. But I'm stating it, but that was the question. It seems, is it the case that when it's relevant to the precepts, you're bothered by it? It came up, you noticed it. If it's just preference or habit, it just like goes under the radar.
I don't know about that. I'm curious, but for myself, I know that there's times when I don't notice precept violations, right? And there are times when I definitely do notice preference wrinkling, right? So I don't know. My guess is that there's some more layers there.
Then we didn't even get like a foothold.
You heading somewhere?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not sure if we all agreed on this, but preference becomes troublesome if we're too attached to it.
Mm.
So preferences are selfing. So cease from evil, release all self-attachment. So if the preference is too strongly held, then it does have something to do with the priest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so showing that continuum there, right?
In my group, we were trying to figure out what a precept or like what a preference was in context, mm-hmm. basically.
Mm-hmm.
And our conclusion was that a precept is a little bit more internal and kind of has a overview of your own values violation or an inclusion of self accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a preference is sometimes, like for the example I use, it's like I try to speak very intentionally when I disagree or in conflict with people.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do my best to do that, then I'm adhering to the precept.
Mm-hmm.
They still might not react the way I prefer them to do. And that might still bother me. But like I follow the precept unless I didn't speak as intentionally or as well as I thought I could.
Yeah. So I wanted to pull this forward because I think we spent a lot of time in this trying to figure this question out. There's things where I have this sense that that's not okay, but why do I have that sense? Is that bias? Is that an inherent wrongness about something? There's a lot of room. There's a lot of possible answers there. And being able to kind of do some precision mindfulness and notice what's attached to what, that's self. I recognize I don't need to listen to that. You do some exploration, and that's an important part of an ethical life is being able to what's it called? Sift. Thank you. Great. Thank you. Yeah, sift the various selves and see what counts here. All right, thank you. So taking refuge. That's this first section we're gonna spend some time on. It's kind of a when I first started reading this, it felt like, boy, this is a lot of words to say something simple. I mean, it felt like a kind of wordy, a wordy section. At its root, what taking refuge is about is at a moment of feeling suffering, what direction do we turn? Are we turning towards distraction? Are we turning towards delusion? Or are we turning towards practice? Right? At that decision point, at that moment of ouch. So that's, if you're not sure about it, kind of return there, and then everything else is sort of a extrapolation, right? So you can take refuge in multiple directions. There's Buddha, there's Dharma, there's Sangha. You can meet the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha at different levels. So there's this transcendent level, this literal level, this practical level. So there's all these permutations. But basically, what happens immediately after a moment of suffering, that's the pivot that counts here. And we're trying to ingrain the habit of turning towards practice, right? Finding a releasing. How's that? Yeah, yes. Oh, distraction and delusion. Yeah. So how do I, if this is I'm having, you know, the thought that like, oh, I'm saying too many times in this class and I'm down on myself for that. Like I could distract and think about whatever, something else. Or I could just deal with that moment of like, oh well, you know, and it passes, for instance. Okay. So are there any questions on the Buddha Dharma Sangha part?
No, I actually have no questions about the Buddha Dharma Sangha. I got it. I guess I would like, if you can, say a little bit more about refuge. I mean, I like that pointing to sort of it's what you do in a moment of suffering. Maybe you were going to elaborate a little more on what, you know, just sort of what that movement of taking refuge is in a moment of suffering.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what that moment is, I think, is meeting our experience directly, right? And so if we're turning towards distraction or delusion, like basically we're like, what's happening there is we're trying to, it looks painful, and so we're trying to get an intermediary in there. We're trying to like somehow defray or diffuse like the impact of life touching us. And so we end up with less of it. And taking refuge, like really what we're doing is like, actually it's okay to be like fully open to this experience exactly as it is and let it move through us. And that's a powerful stance in the world. We're not taking that experience, which is coming towards us in front of us, and pushing it away or like trying to do anything with it. We're just allowing. Okay. Somewhere else.
I'm getting hand motions and I don't understand them. That's a good one.
I'm pretty sure that means you still have a question.
Let me forget my question, but it was something along the lines of, it seems pretty common for me to feel like I just get stuck in something that, how is that different than accepting? Like, yeah, great if it could move through, but like, so being open to it, could you say anything more about that aspect?
Yeah. So often uncomfortable experiences have a duration, and it's not always the duration that we prefer. Fortunately, Buddhism is super clear that they all have a finite duration. So impermanence applies to negative emotions and situations. It will change. And especially like when we're kind of like flirting with refuge, like we're kind of like in and out, like not quite there, not really landed it, but like, we recognize it would be a good time to take refuge. We want to do it. You know, we're kind of bouncing around there. It looks like it would go on much too long, right? It looks really scary to allow that. And so that's the kind of a building faith and practice of like doing it enough times that like, again, the way to practice, because this kind of adds up such that like we know, like, yeah, it's going to change and it'll be okay. I can feel this and I won't be obliterated. It'll just be the moment.
Hello, this is Thomas. I think my question is kind of a variation on Yukio's. When is it like, there are times when, like, I've had this experience, like, oh, I'm having this negative emotion, some time passes, pass away. That's over and done with. Great. Mm-hmm. But I can easily imagine there are times where, like, it's something like it's like stirring and stuff. And how do you make sure that letting it pass through doesn't become just like bypassing or like being numb to the experience, or like, you know, when does it become something, oh, I need to actually like reflect and like do something on this now that I've kind of like let the initial moment pass?
Great. So just to like draw the question out a little more, Thomas is asking about like, so what if like, you know, we're trying to be open, but actually we're kind of doing this like forced equanimity or kind of like apathy sort of a thing, which is a near enemy. Yeah, I think like that's it's a common miss, right? We have this idea like, if I'm a good Zen student, then I'm not going to be bothered by this, and therefore I'm not going to be bothered by this. And and like, well, it'll get you so far, but yeah, it's not the best answer. Let's see. So as we attune, you know, to this, like you'll start to, like for instance, like doing recollection, like that's a time when that might show up, right? Like, oh, like maybe I missed something there. Another thing that I would watch for is, like thoughts in which you're proving that like you're trying to like underline or like kind of lawyer your case of like, I'm done with that. All right. Or, you know, like those are, for me, those are like pretty good signals that like I bypassed something. Right. Or I didn't like I find myself that didn't matter, or, heads up, because why, who am I arguing with right now, right? There's a reason that's showing up. So those are some things I might look for. And there's probably also another possibility is, and you might have to like kind of do some like, rewind a little bit and try to catch it. But like, what does it feel like right before you bypass? Right. And for myself, there's this kind of it's kind of like a slipping around sort of the, like that, that's the, like that's the, if I had to put a movement to it, it's like, oh, there's a giant, like something right there. I don't want it. And there's this like little evasion. And so if I get that sense of like wanting to evade, like that's a clue that like, oh, watch for the bypass. Yeah. You.
What kind of comes to mind for this is part of the Eightfold Path, which is skillful view and taking refuge. It's like I'm reminded, like, take refuge in maybe the example of the Buddha or the teachings or the harmony in the Sangha. But the skillful view, you know, like, I take it as an encouragement to shift from a relative, what do I want? What does it need to be? Versus, it is all flowing. It is constantly flowing. And like you've said many times, let it flow through. But I don't know. I just thought there was something very helpful in this, tying the skillful view in. And I don't know if you want to elaborate on that at all.
Sounds good. Let's see if there's any more that bubbles up there. I think that's part of, you know, like the wordiness of this section is that there's a variety of vantage points that we might look through. So if we've got some situation, and you're taking refuge in Buddha sounds relevant, right? There's different access points, right? You can access Buddha as like historical figure, how did that work for him, right? And like comparing your life. You can access Buddha as like meditation, right? The practice of Zazen. You can access Buddha as like awakening, the Sanskrit root syllable is awaken, that enlightenment, that universal mind, right? So there's these different ways to read it, to look for, how do I find that turning moment in myself right now with this particular pain? Likewise with Dharma, likewise with Sangha, you could look at each of those from different levels. And that's what this section is laying out for you. Anything else on taking refuge? Maruka.
Maruka, and something that's hopeful for me, taking refuge is really just fully feeling my feelings and my suffering. And just going there with it. And just not pushing it away. Kind of like riding it.
Yeah. Nice.
I do have one style. For me, taking refuge, I don't know if it's Buddha, Dharma, or Sangha, but it's often the fact that bearing this is possible. Usually painful mm-hmm. things, it feels like it's going to destroy me. Mm-hmm. And remembering that taking refuge is a precept is, people have experienced these things before, and it's possible.
Thanks.
Hello, I'm B. I really like what you said about feeling your feelings fully. I relate a lot to that. I hate speaking this microphone with a bunch of islands. Something I've been trying to concentrate on is responding instead of reacting. Mm. And the big feelings are almost like a storm. I kind of have to wait through. So I'm not taking my thoughts as seriously. Mm-hmm. And it seems like some of the taking refuge is a way possibly, and I would love to hear what you have to say about it, but to be brave, while weathering that storm, as that feeling passes. Mm-hmm. So if you have any insight or wisdom around that, that'd be great.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think when something happens, there's a situation, we say something, whatever, there's suffering in the midst. It feels like a storm, right? And there's this kind of crescendo and a gradual leaving of that. And that's really obvious and palpable to our experience. And I want to be yes, that's part of how we experience it. And it's also true that it's just a succession of moments, right? And you have a lot more leverage over each of those moments than you do the storm. And so that's one piece I would add there is I can't change this reaction, right? They said that I'm feeling this, it's going to the residue is going to be around for the next couple hours. That's how it is. And this moment right here, I could do something. Yeah.
It's like, so this isn't too, but like your sympathetic system.
You're doing great.
Right. So it's like, okay, I have a few responses going.
Yeah.
Or I have a negative emotion. And it means that like any reaching to your prefrontal cortex or like anything that's actually, you have almost no discernment. Right. So like you're extending that period where you have more than just two choices, you have multiple choices. Mm-hmm. By letting that storm pass.
Mm-hmm.
But even still, like essentially like, you're extending the fuse, right? Like between a reaction and
mm-hmm.
you're
mm-hmm.
getting input and then you're responding as you're reacting.
Which is a beautiful segue to the next section, okay, actually. You know, no, that's great. So I think like I want to draw out two things there. So one is, you know, like this honest self-assessment of like, okay, like where am I within this storm? Like, and like, I want to keep attempting to take refuge in the midst of it. I want to keep finding moments where I can like pivot, where I can like, you know, release for a moment, even if it comes back. And I want to wait for most of that storm to pass before I like take a lot of action around it. It's just a lot less mess. So, agreed. Which brings us to the three pure precepts. Thanks for the segue. So cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. And again, when I first started working with this, it was like, that's just the 10 precepts kind of scrunched. Like, what's the deal? Like all these words again. But I think they're, I've come around to them. So this, this comes from the Dhammapada originally, not to do any evil, to cultivate good, to purify one's mind. This is the teaching of the Buddhas. With the Mahayana, to purify one's mind became do good for others. So the three pure precepts kind of layer on to our figures here. So Kanzeon acceptance would be the first one. Fugen, who we don't have, but Fudo is a stand-in for Fugen of that loving action, and then Manjushri of the non-dual wisdom, right? So that kind of symbolic triad shows up here. My translation for this is stop, do, smile. The stop is like stillness is most obvious, right? Cessation of just not causing any more problems, right? Hippocratic oath, right? Just like pursue no harm. Dogen has a fast called Shuwaka Makusa on this and on this basically practice of restraint, of not causing harm. And the refrain from it is only that there are things that one should not do. And he says that like 30 times in that fascicle. So like there's different ways we go about this. There's monitoring the sensescapes, like what do we expose ourselves to in life? There's like how complex is our life? There's patterns of speech. We choose not to say certain things. So there's a lot of different ways that you might work with cease from evil. And it's really informed by, this recollection practice, by this noticing of what hurts, right? So trust it. The second one, do only good, has to do with clarity and action, letting action arise out of stillness. So first we land, when we take refuge in Buddha, we let that meditative mind like create a little space. And if we do that, if awareness is pooled, like something can happen. And so allowing that to appear. And I think like one of the things I watch for there is that if my sense of direction is too loud, it's probably not it, right? Like if I'm insisting, like moral intuition is kind of quiet, right? It's a subtle voice that kind of that appears. It's not highlighted. It's not underlined. It's not all caps. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of subtlety, and so that's one thing I watch for. Is it should be a little like a root tip kind of finding its way. That's a feeling tone I trust. So part of the trick is to cease from evil first. Give yourself that time to like come to rest, or like let it be dark and mysterious and unknown. And then you can kind of feel like, oh yeah, what wants to happen? If we don't let that moment of rest happen, we can't feel that. It's too subtle. If we're not feeling it, we're just operating on, you know, heuristics, on past conditioning, on like my identity of like, oh, I think this is right and I think this is wrong. And, you know, like it serves, like it's fast. Like, you know, we can get through life like that. And we're probably also leaving something on the table. And so you're here, you want more. So that's part of it. Yeah, so far so good. Okay, oh, Muchak.
Hi, Muchak. Kakumyo, I didn't catch how you were relating the bodhisattvas in the front of the room to the three pure precepts. Could you say more about that?
I can. So in order to cease, you have to accept, right? Like there's that's the letting go of. And Kanzan is offering this like whatever it is, like I'm here for it, right? That completely open stance. Fugen, who we don't have pictured there, but would typically be there, is a bodhisattva of skillful action, loving action. And so that's that like intuitive clarity about like, okay, what's needed here? What arises out of that stillness? And then Manjushri is the non-dual wisdom. And so that's the part we're getting to. That's the smile. So it's really, my sense of it is it comes down to really understanding interdependence of like non-separation. And if we're not somehow insisting on like my separateness, like then that's how it goes. And there's so many ways to insist on our separateness, right? It just underlies a tremendous amount of thoughts and behavior. And Manjushri is this symbol of there's another way to do that, right? There's another option where we're not actually separate. And if we're seen with skillful view the situation from that perspective, this is what happens. Yeah. Yeah. And I think it relates to the early Pali version of purify one's mind, right? The skillful view of keep guiding the mind back to knowing what's wholesome, knowing interdependence, knowing non-self, knowing impermanence. What is wholesome is caring for all beings. We're included in that. I think like transfer of merit expresses that third phase, do good for others. Yeah. Other questions there? Okay. One more question in little groups. So I'll give you the question and then find two other people. So three pure precepts. Cease from evil, do only good, do good for others. What's your strong suit, right? Out of those three, what's your blind spot? Either one. Okay. How do you relate to those three? Go. All right, let's come on back.
Yeah.
All right. Closing thought or two?
I got one.
Okay.
These are all pretty difficult.
True. Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. It should be really difficult. Because, you know, like you're holding yourself to a high standard, right? Like it just keeps going and going and going. Like there's always more refinement. And hopefully that feels like enriching and not like just ongoing failure.
Yeah, it's thrilling.
Good.
So difficult.
Jared, we had an interesting, I guess, interpretation of what was how we were seeing what the strong point was. Mm. You know, for me, it was what comes most naturally to me.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas other people in our group were interpreting it as what do I naturally just want to put the most effort into, mm. the most extra work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Me, I'm thinking, what do I have to work the hardest to kind of round out
mm-hmm.
is my weak point. And yeah, it's a nice note.
Yeah, yeah. Lindsay, and then we'll move to Vestas.
Oh, I just want to say, I think these are really hard. And yet, I also realize that I was, in a way, these feel also really easy. Like, and not like I'm like so great at all these things that but I don't know, as we were talking about it, I just felt like a softness and like these are naturally me. I am these things. And so it is just a return, and like that's refuge too, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so that just lightened my heart tonight.
Totally agree. Good, 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 good. Okay. So next week, Minshew will be exploring Do Not Kill, Cultivate and Encourage Life with you all. So let that kind of percolate around between now and then. And bring him lots of really hard questions.